Having grown up in Calypso, learning of the Empress's death rocked him to the core. "Do you care that I killed her?" Roan hated himself for saying it, but "No, I don't." He despised the Sands and their rule, just as he despised all the monarchies waging war. "See? We're not so different." Bane's words were so close to his own thoughts that a shiver of unease rolled down his spine. Roan swallowed the feeling away, because this was a rare opportunity to gather information. "Are you killing two rulers in each kingdom?" Bane nodded. "One is dead in each so far. One more to go." "And in the east?" Roan already knew the answer. He was just delaying, giving himself time to think. "King Orhon Ironclad is dead. Gareth is next in line." "Then you'll have to go through me," Roan said. "I thought you were done with violence, cousin."
"I'm not your cousin, and I'm warming up again."
"Very well. I will see you soon. But first I have other business to attend to." When Roan blinked, Bane was gone, disappearing like he'd never existed at all. "His name is The Horse," Roan said, when he rejoined Gwen and Gareth out on the road. He looked for some kind of a reaction from Gareth, but got nothing back. Gwen said, "Whatever you say, Peacemaker." They started off, with Roan leading the horse.
"What's wrong?"
Gwen asked, after they'd been walking in silence for a while.
"You mean, besides that town being massacred?" Roan said.
"Sorry," Gwen said. "I just thought there was something else." Roan realized he was doing it again, falling into the lies, the secrets. He'd been to the brink of death with these two, and yet he still wasn't willing to trust them.
"There is," he said. "I saw Bane."
"What?" Gwen and Gareth said at the same time. Gareth drew his sword.
"Relax, he's gone."
Gareth frowned, but sheathed his blade.
"Did he say anything?" he asked evenly.
"He said we're on the same side.
The side of peace."
Gareth scoffed.
"He tries to murder me and says he wants peace."
"I believe him," Roan said.
"I think in his twisted mind he believes that killing eight monarchs will bring peace to the four kingdoms. He spoke of a prophecy, and I'm certain he meant the Western Oracle's teachings."
"And you agree with him?"
"Of course not. I'm just saying that he believes it."
"Did he say anything else?" Gareth asked. Roan nodded.
"He asked me to..."
"To what?"
"To kill you."
None of them had said much after that. Roan confirmed he wasn't planning on killing Gareth, at least not yet. Gareth thought the idea of Roan killing anyone was hilarious, and Gwen said she had the urge to beat them both senseless, although she noted that wouldn't be difficult since they were both so thin on sense as it was. Roan told them everything else that Bane had told him, and then all conversation died for most of the day. By nightfall they reached the next town, and to Roan's relief, this one was full of life.
"Restor," Gwen said. "The last major stopping place on the Western Road. Night's End isn't far now. 2 days. 3 at the most."
"I still think we should pass it by," Roan said. "It's too risky."
"There are hundreds of travellers here," Gareth said. "None shall take notice of 3 wayward strangers."
"2 men and 1 woman," Roan said. "We shall stick out like a black eye."
"I will arrive separately," Gareth said.
"No," Roan said quickly.
"We stay together."
"He's right," Gwen said. "We have to split up, at least temporarily. We will meet by happenstance at the second inn on the right. Gareth, when you arrive, request a room on the top floor, facing west." The dead village they'd passed through earlier popped into Roan's mind. He said,
"This is folly."
Gareth grinned in the green moonlight. The red moon was naught but a bloody sliver, giving the entire night an eerie complexion.
"What? You don't trust me on my own? I once commanded entire battalions. I've fought in many battles. I think I can handle a few outlaws." Roan shook his head, but offered no further objection. They approached the town wearing cloaks to mask their faces, except for Roan, who, with his blonde locks and soft features, would fit in here as well as anywhere in the West. Before they reached the edge of the lights, Gareth broke off to the side of the road, disappearing into some tall grass. Roan and Gwen continued on. Restor, unlike the previous town, was a bustling way station with torchlit streets filled with hundreds of people leading carts laden with goods, merchants selling wares, cooks offering hot bowls of stew, and grooms trying to attract travellers to the inns they worked at with "the best stables in town." People seemed to be haggling over everything. The price of a leather cap, the cost of a bowl of soup, the going rate for a room at the nearest inn. Nothing seemed to be set in stone. Strangely, though he was a world and a lifetime away from his childhood home, Resto reminded Roan of Calypso, where negotiating was an art you learned before you could walk. He remembered when his guardian would bring him to the markets. They would take turns trying to get the best price for fruits and vegetables. His guardian had been terrible at it. Roan, however, had taken to it naturally. Once, he'd managed to procure an entire bushel of apples for only a single dragon mark. Mark in Swansea had been so proud. Aye, he thought, a lifetime ago. Now Markin was dead and Roan was in the West, a place his guardian had always warned him was dangerous to someone like him. Someone marked. Roan shook away the memories, politely declining two offers from inns on the left, as well as the first one on the right, before stopping and pretending to consider the second on the right, the one they'd agreed with Gareth to meet at. A young groom approached. He had blonde, tousled hair and a crooked smile. His front two teeth stuck out, but they only made him appear friendlier. The innkeeper made a good choice in salesmen, Roan thought. The boy said, "You are lucky. We have one spot left for your horse. It will be cared for as well as you and your mistress." "She's my wife," Roan said bluntly. Gwen fired a look in his direction, but he ignored it. "Oh, my apologies. I meant no offence." "None taken. How much for room and board for us and our horse?" Roan asked. Gareth had given him some of the coin he'd raided from the ironclad war chest before they'd separated. "For you? 1 golden or 2 silvers. "Do you take me for a fool?" Roan said, though he had no idea what the going rate was. All he knew was that not haggling would be more suspicious. He had to go lower by at least a third, but if he offered a price too low, the groom might take him for a lost cause and walk away. 8 silvers, and I'll forget how you twice insulted me and my wife." The young boy's face reddened.
Yes, you have a deal. My master will be most pleased to have such an astute traveller under his roof."
Roan handed him the horse's reins and flipped the groom a copper. He caught it with one hand and bit it, grinning from ear to ear. Roan suspected he'd still overpaid, but it was better than making a scene.
"I will water, feed, and brush your horse. Does he have a name?"
"The horse," Roan said. The boy blinked, but then took it in stride.
"The horse, it is. Come now, boy, we'll take good care of you."
He started to lead the horse toward the stables attached to the inn, stopping only to call back over his shoulder.
"My master is Carrington. Tell him the rate we've agreed and he'll get you squared."
"How did you do that?" Gwen whispered when the boy was gone. Roan laughed. "In Calypso, haggling is a way of life. Maybe the West isn't such a foreign place to me after all." But still, he felt proud to be able to do something that impressed Gwen. She seemed so capable of doing everything herself, better than anyone else. It was what attracted him to her, that free, independent spirit, like a wild stallion galloping across the plains.
"In Faria, the price is the price," she said.
Roan winked.
"Where's the fun in that?"
He offered her his hand. She looked at it, a half-smile curling the edge of her lip.
"Wife?"
He shrugged.
"The West is a religious place, though it seems the Western Road has descended into chaos. Still, I wanted to be safe. If we're a legitimate pair, it will raise fewer questions."
She took his hand.
He barely looked at me. Did you notice?
Though Roan hadn't grown up here, Markin had taught him much of the West.
It is considered the worst behaviour to stare directly at a woman.
That's helpful, Gwen said.
Strange, but helpful.
Hand in hand, they stepped closer to the light of the inn. Carrington's, it was called. Roan opened the door, holding it for Gwen. He followed close behind, stepping back in front of her as soon as they were inside. Such behaviour would normally earn him an elbow to the ribs or a push, but this time she allowed it. To his surprise, the atmosphere inside the inn was subdued, the patrons hunched over bowls of soup and talking in hushed tones. A few glanced in their direction, but their gazes didn't linger. A man of average height bustled past, carrying a tray of bowls expertly in one hand.
"Be right with you," he said.
He had a broad, bald head on top, shining in the lamplight, and a ring of salt-and-pepper hair around the edges, descending on either side into bushy sideburns that connected with his beard. He slipped between tables in an effortless manner that suggested years of practice. With a deft jerk of his wrist, the bowls slid from his tray onto one of the tables, alighting almost perfectly in front of each of the hungry men awaiting their suppers. The innkeeper pirouetted like a dancer, returning the tray to a spot beside a door that presumably led to the kitchen. He turned to face them.
"Did Pod get you all sorted out?" he asked.
"Yes," Roan said. "He drives a hard bargain." The man chuckled.
"Indeed he does. My margins have increased by 10% since I brought him on. But I probably shouldn't be telling you that."
Roan smiled amiably. "We agreed on 8 silvers for room and board, for us and our trusty steed." The man frowned, as if frustrated, though Roan could detect the lie behind his eyes.
"It seems you drive a hard bargain, too."
"Is the rate too low?" The man seemed to consider, though again, Roan could see the act behind his mannerisms. In his eyes glinted the light of greed.
"For you, no," he said. "I will accept it."
"Thank you."
He counted out the silvers and threw in 2 additional coppers, which he hoped was a reasonable enough tip to gain them preferred service.
"May I request a room on the top floor, westward facing?"
The man pocketed the coin so quickly, Roan barely saw him do it. If the inn didn't work out, he had a career as a pickpocket.
"I will see what I can do. Right this way."
He snatched a large key from a hook, 2 lanterns from a platform attached to the wall, and he led them to the left, away from the tables, and then up a switchback staircase for 3 flights. On the landing, they took a door to the right into a hallway, the walls painted warm brown. Several doors down, he unlocked a room and pushed inside. He placed 1 of the lanterns on a small table.
"Will this serve?" he asked.
Roan scanned the small room. There were 2 small no-post beds and a window facing to the west, though the dark curtains were drawn.
"Yes, thank you. Can supper be brought up? We'd prefer our privacy."
"Of course."
The man paused in the doorway, as if waiting for something. Roan made a big show of digging around in his pocket before handing him another 2 coppers.
"Please allow for 1 bowl to be free of meat."
The man gave him a strange look, but nodded. As before, the coins vanished, only the softest jingle giving them away in his deep pockets.
"At last," Roan said when he'd shut the door. "We're alone." "Hilarious," Gwen said.
She cast off her cloak, revealing her yellow eyes and silver hair. Her armour was orange in the lamplight.
"What?"
she asked, noticing Roan's stare.
"You're... don't say it," she said. "I'm not some sprite to be wooed with empty words."
Roan grimaced as Gwen strode to the window, peeling back the curtains a sliver to peer out.
"Must you always be so what?"
She didn't look back.
"Never mind."
Roan sat on the end of 1 of the beds.
How had he made such difficult friends? "Where is he?"
Gwen muttered.
"Gareth was supposed to follow almost right behind us."
"He's probably just taking his time," Roan said. If Gwen heard him, she gave no indication. He came up behind her, placing his hand on her shoulder. She flinched at the touch, but then relaxed, rubbing her cheek against the back of his hand.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I know I am as sharp as my sword at times."
"At times?" Roane japed. She twisted her head back to give him a dirty look, but he could see she was amused.
"Must you always joke?"
"Not always," Roane said. He cupped his other hand against her cheek. His fingertips felt a fire. She stood, her face so close he could see the individual flecks of colour in her golden eyes. One hand remained on her cheek, while the other drifted down her neck, her shoulder, along the smooth armour protecting her arm, and finally dropping to the swell of her hip, resting there lightly. He wanted her so badly, he felt powerless against the desire burning inside him. And then she pressed her lips to his, and stars exploded across his vision. All the worry, all the fear, all the triumphs and defeats melted away into the kiss, which was nothing but pure sensation shooting through him. With a gasp it was over, and Gwen was pulling away and looking back out the window. Roane stared at her.
"What just happened?" he wondered.
"I'm sorry," she said again.
"It's okay," Roane said,
though he felt breathless and weak from the kiss being broken off so early.
"But I warn you, I will not give up. I promise to make the next kiss so good you shall not be able to withdraw."
To his delight, she laughed, and the momentary tension was broken. A moment later, there was a knock on the door. Roane opened his mouth to warn Gwen, but she moved so fast he didn't get a word out before she was cloaked, turned away from the door.
"Yes?" Roane said.
"Supper,"
came Carrington's voice through the door.
"If you would, please leave it outside the door."
Roane wasn't about to let the man swindle him into giving away any more coppers, lest the innkeeper think him an easy target.
"As you wish."
There was a clatter, and then the sound of footsteps departing on wooden floorboards. In an instant, Gwen's cloak was off and she was back at the window. Roane had the urge to go back to her, to rope his arms around her, but thought better of it. He didn't want to suffocate her, not when it was clear she needed space and time. Instead, he opened the door and retrieved the tray Carrington had left. It contained two mugs of water and two bowls of soup, one of which appeared to be free of chunks of meat. A small dish of salt accompanied. Roane placed the tray next to the lamp on the small table and took his bowl to the bed, leaning back against the wall. He slurped a mouthful from his spoon, cringing at its blandness. He added salt, and the flavour improved.
"Aren't you going to eat? Someone has to watch for the king. Do you really think he'll ever go back to Ironwood?"
Gwen turned to look at him, and her eyes were thoughtful.
"He better. Gryon is too impulsive. Guy was somewhat better, but still too quick to wage war. Gareth is a thinker, always has been. He would be the better choice of the three.
Except he doesn't want to be king. And you said it yourself, a shield who doesn't fulfill his purpose will receive no respect from his people."
"I know," she said, "but there has to be a way for him to redeem himself."
"Well, he can't do it from the west. He needs to go back to Faerie.
He won't go without a strong reason."
Roane finished his soup and took Gwen's place at the window so she could eat. Now he was starting to get worried, too. Gareth should have arrived a long time ago, unless he'd stopped elsewhere for supper or forgotten which inn they'd agreed to meet at. And then he heard a noise, rising above the general bustle of the town. He scanned the main road, searching for the source. His heart sank when he found it.
"Gareth, what are you doing?" he muttered.
"What?" Gwen said, pushing beside him to follow his gaze. Gareth stood on an overturned crate in the middle of the road, holding a large mug, waving it back and forth like a sword. He wore no cloak like he'd promised he would, and his strong iron-clad features, his dark curly hair, his strong dimpled chin, his pale skin, as well as his armour bearing the Eastern Sigil, were revealed for every passerby to see. And, to make matters worse, he was shouting, his voice so loud Roane could make out every word.
"Come drink with your enemy, Westerners. I am King Gareth Ironclad, and my weapon of choice is ale. I challenge each of you to a duel. Whoever falls from their crate first is the loser."
Gareth swayed, tumbling from the crate and spilling the strong drink all over himself.
"For Orr's sake," Gwen hissed. "The fool. He will be the end of us all."
She swept away from the window and burst through the door. The corridor was already empty by the time Roan gathered up their things and moved to follow her. He raced for the steps, taking them two at a time, ignoring Carrington's question about the quality of the soup as he passed, bursting through the door and onto the street. To the right and down a ways, Gwen, fully uncloaked, was helping Gareth to his feet while other travellers stared at them, pointing. Roan could see why. Gwen's armour was like a silver starburst, her hair like falling water. Even in the darkness, she was a spectacle the likes of which most of these people had never seen. Not to mention her eyes, as yellow and bright as twin suns. Several rougher-looking men crept around the edges, whispering to each other behind their hands. "Not good," Roan thought, making his way toward his friends. He boldly walked up to them, raising his voice. "Friends," he said, "I should never have bought you those fake sets of armour or wigs. You make fools of yourselves." Gwen's gaze darted up to his, and he nodded in the direction of the sinister-looking men. Her yellow eyes narrowed. Roan continued. "And you," he grabbed Gareth by the arm, "should go easy on the drink. Do you remember that time in Talis when you ran naked through the streets? I feared the Furia would hang you from your manhood as punishment." A few of the people laughed, but Roan was watching the rough men. They said something to each other and then left, off to find an easier, less public target. Roan exhaled deeply.
"Come on," he whispered to Gareth. "We cannot stay here any longer."
"A soft bed," Gareth slurred.
"Some other time."
"Hot soup."
"Later."
Gareth shrugged, a lazy grin flopping across his face.
"Fine. Take me home."
Roan raised his voice once more.
"We will, Your Highness. We'll get you on the first caravan back to the ironclad castle in Feria."
More laughter from the crowd, who finally started to disperse.
"Nice save," Gwen said. "Your talents grow by the hour." "Sometimes it takes a fool to save a fool," Roan said.
Together they hauled Gareth out of town and back onto the western road, stopping only once the lights of the city were well behind them.
"We should go back for the horse," Gareth said loudly.
Roan regretted leaving the horse behind, but the poor animal would probably be better off without them. The stable boy was a good lad, and would keep him warm and well-fed, which was more than they could promise. And if they set foot in Ressa again, there was a good chance they would never leave. They argued non-stop from Restor to Night's End. 2 days had passed, but each was the same argument, one that had resumed after a brief pause for a midday meal of day-old bread and hard butter that they'd purchased from a passing cart merchant. "So I stopped at a tavern for a quick mug of the West's finest ale. Who cares? I was just trying to have a good time," Gareth said.
"And lost your cloak somewhere," Gwen said.
"And declared your true identity in the middle of the streets," Roan added. "And were so drunk you could barely walk. And challenged every person you saw to a drinking duel. And lost the horse."
"All right, all right," Gareth said.
"What if I said I don't remember any of that? Does that help my cause?"
"No,"
they both answered together.
"Then I'm extraordinarily sorry," Gareth said, though he didn't sound sorry at all. "Well, about the horse, anyway. I miss him."
It was, however, the first time he'd apologized, so Roan considered it progress. And he was joking again, though Roan wasn't certain what that meant exactly. The last time Gareth had japed this much, he was covering up the turmoil he was feeling inside. They rounded a bend, curling over the crest of a small rise, and Roan stopped abruptly when he saw it. Night's End. Its high stone walls were tan, framing the city like a giant picture frame. Beyond the walls, the city rose gradually, until it reached a hill where a castle stood like a beacon shining in the sun, 3 round towers stretching to the 7th heaven these people so devoutly believed in. Until this moment, Roan never expected to feel anything when he first laid eyes on the city of his birth. Instead, anger rolled through him like a slow-burning fire. His mother had been forced to send him away from this city with a violent dreadnought because of his mark, something he'd been born with, something he had no control over. How was that fair? How was that right? How did a people who claimed to be holy treat a mere child like some kind of a demon?
Roan, Gwen said.
He barely heard her, the anger chased away by another feeling. Sorrow. The sadness was rich and deep, a pool that rose over his head, stealing his breath. It was sadness for a lost childhood, stripped from him before he'd ever really understood why. He'd lost his family at the same time, and now both his parents were dead. He'd never feel their embrace. Never. That word was filled with so much finality, he could hardly bear to think it.
Roan, Gwen said again. Are you well?
Aye, he said. I was only thinking about what it will be like to meet my siblings at last.
We can't rightly march up to the castle gates and declare your true identity, Gareth said.
No, Roan agreed. That's your favourite thing to do. Gareth winced, but he wore a smile.
I suppose I deserved that.
Roan shook his head. He knew a fantastic way to chase away his own melancholy. Deflection. He turned to Gareth and said,
When I first met you, you were a brash, arrogant prince standing on high, looking down on the world with a smug grin. Now I know the immense weight you were carrying, the death of your mother, the role as the shield. But you held that load over your head like it was nothing, a sack filled with air.
Gareth looked away, back toward the city.
I was different, then. I hadn't failed.
Roan felt like he could see the weight on his friend's shoulders, a growing load hunching his shoulders, making it difficult for him to stand. Gwen seemed ready to say something, but Roan stopped her with a subtle gesture.
You're the same person, he said, except now you drag the weight around like an iron plough, and it's pulling you under, burying you alive.
Gareth looked back, and the weight vanished, the familiar cheeky smile returning like it had never been gone in the first place.
As usual, you are too serious, my friend. I only wanted a bit of drink and a good laugh. Yes, I took things too far. I messed up, and I'm sorry. It won't happen again.
Roan glanced at Gwen, and she shrugged. Gareth did seem to be back to his normal self all of a sudden.
Fine. Good. But we can't make any mistakes in the Holy City. The Furia will be here. Getting drunk or causing a disturbance will not go unpunished.
Gareth bowed to him.
Yes, Your Highness. As you command.
Roan rolled his eyes and turned his attention back to the city. They made their way down the small hill to where there was a steady influx of travellers, as well as lines of merchants departing the city. Those exiting were mostly ignored, while guards bearing the rearing stallion sigil on their chests eyed newcomers, asking questions and searching their belongings for weapons. The southern entrance to Night's End was like a peephole into the enormous walled-in city, providing the barest glimpse of the cobblestoned streets and sturdy buildings beyond. This was the third major city Roan had seen, and he marvelled at how different each was. Compared to the dusty clay and sandstone streets of Calypso, Night's End was a fortress, though even the tall castle towers lacked the beautiful symmetry of the Calypsian pyramids. And next to Faria and Ironwood, Night's End felt so open, almost unguarded, if not for the wall that surrounded it. They fell into the slow-moving line. Once more Gwen was cloaked in black, her face hidden in shadow, while Gareth was wearing a simple cloth shirt and trousers. They'd left his armour in a bush off the road. He seemed glad to see it go, like it was his final act in relinquishing the crown to his brother. Roan had encouraged Gwen to work her magic to get rid of her own armour, but she refused. Plus, she'd explained, removing ore was more difficult when outside of Ironwood, and once she did, she wouldn't be able to get it back. Roan hoped the gate guards wouldn't ask to check beneath her cloak. They shouldn't, he thought. A woman's modesty is respected here. They approached the gate. Let me do the talking, he said. Gwen nodded and Gareth smirked. One of the guards eyed them as they came nearer.
State your business, he said.
Roan smiled easily. We are seeking sanctuary and work in the city.
Sanctuary from what?
Birds, Gareth said. Roan fired daggers from his eyes.
Birds?
The guard's natural scowl deepened. I'm only japing, Gareth said. The Western Road has grown dangerous these last days. Outlaws, vagabonds, scoundrels. We fear for the life of our sister. He motioned to Gwendolyn, who bowed rather stiffly.
Yes, Roan interjected, trying to regain control of the situation. We are brothers, though many don't believe us.
What is your trade?
Entertainers, Gareth said, once more interrupting. Puppet shows, mostly. But never fear, good man, our japes are of the clean variety. After all, we are wrath-abiding citizens.
Roan held his breath as the man stared them down. Then, to his utter surprise, the guard waved them through.
We could use more entertainers in this crusty old city.
When they were out of earshot, Roan said, That was a big risk. Gareth shrugged.
Not really. We are pretty entertaining, wouldn't you say? And anyway, sometimes a bit of absurdity goes a long way.
Though Roan was somewhat annoyed, the feeling was eclipsed by his relief that Gareth was beginning to act more like his normal self. Night's End was like 1,000 restos stacked on top of and next to each other. The streets were full to overflowing. Sights, smells, and sounds assaulted Roan's senses, and he quickly became overwhelmed. Gareth seemed less so, buying small trinkets and foodstuffs from merchants, trading quips and smiles. He had a way of blending in while still seeming larger than life. It was a quality Roan envied. Gwen, on the other hand, just seemed bitter.
"Look at the way the women are dressed," she said. "It must be 1,000 degrees. I'm swimming in sweat."
Roan had noticed the women, most of whom were dressed in what his guardian had called purity dresses. Shapeless white frocks that covered all but their hands and faces.
It is tradition, Roan said. Aye, a foolish tradition.
A spike of anger rose up in him.
And they think the Aurians are a bunch of godless witches, he said. So you both think the others' traditions are foolish. And everyone wonders why this war will never end.
Though he couldn't see Gwen's face, he could sense her silently fuming beneath her cloak. Thankfully, Gareth broke up the tension.
"I don't know," he said. "There's something enticing about beauty hidden beneath folds of cloth, don't you think?"
Roan rolled his eyes. "Leave it to his charming friend to see something lust-worthy in a purity dress."
"And what of those women?"
Gwen whispered, pointing to a few gathered together, discussing something quietly.
"What about them?" Roan asked.
Then the women turned, and Roan had to force himself not to stare. Their faces were freshly scarred, deep lines cut into their flesh, forming what appeared to be a W across the whole of their faces.
"Do you think that is a noble tradition?"
Gwen asked harshly.
"Self-mutilation?"
Roan almost hoped the scars were self-inflicted, the only other option being a much worse one. Still, he'd never heard of Westerners carving their own faces.
"All I'm saying is we should keep an open mind."
They moved on. Gareth asked a female merchant, whose face was, thankfully, not scarred, where the Western archives were, and she directed him toward the castle at the top of the hill.
"But you need special permission to visit them."
"What's your plan to get into the archives?" Gareth asked as they walked.
"I don't have one," Roan said. "Fantastic. My favourite kind of mission, an ill-planned one."
The sarcasm was heavy in his voice.
"We could sneak in," Gwen suggested.
"If the archives are in the castle, they'll be heavily guarded. I'm sure many of the texts are priceless."
"Then how?" Gwen asked.
"We came all this way. We can't just accept that getting in will be impossible."
"No," Roan said. "We're not accepting anything.
My sister is the queen, remember?
Gareth laughed.
I don't think she'll remember you.
Gwen lowered her voice.
And have you forgotten your mark? And mine? They will burn us at the stake, like the demons they think we are.
Maybe, Roan said thoughtfully. Maybe not. We need to gather more information on just who my sister is. They'd asked more than 36 people about Queen Rhea, and all of them agreed she was the most holy woman to ever rule Night's End. In fact, they called her Rhea the Righteous. She'd even carved a W into her own face to mark her as Roth's servant, which explained the numerous similarly scarred faces they'd seen throughout the city. According to everyone they spoke to, Rhea's purity was so bright she'd single-handedly defeated the largest northern army to sail against the west. The news had rocked all three of them. The north had been defeated. How? When? Evidently it had been recently, within the last few days. My sister, Roan thought, as they stood without the castle gates, which, strangely, stood wide open. She rules differently. She invites the commoners into her stronghold. And hundreds of the people, if not thousands, were accepting her invitation, marching through the gates and into the large inner courtyard. She will accept me, Roan said, glancing back at Gareth and Gwen. I know it. They'd discussed their options, and agreed to risk Roan revealing himself to his sister. If she was truly the good, honourable woman the Westerners believed her to be, certainly she would speak with him.
Just don't show her your mark, Gwen muttered, after grudgingly assenting to the plan.
He nodded. Remember, stand outside the castle gates at dusk each day until I come find you, he said. Gareth said, Be safe. It was the most normal, serious thing he'd said to Roan in days, probably since they were trapped in the wood nymph's enchanted locket.
I will.
He longed to embrace them both, to hold them close, to let this moment linger a bit longer. Instead, they clasped arms briefly, and then Roan slipped into the throng. He pushed and forced his way toward the front of the crowd, as close to the raised dais as he could get. There he saw her. Her white purity dress flowed around her body, covering much of her skin, but her face and hair were visible. Her hair was almost the exact color of his, her features soft, with high cheekbones, a delicate nose, piercing turquoise eyes, and... Though he'd known to expect it, the scar on her face made him gasp, and several people gave him strange looks, moving away. The W carved into her face was the same as the ones he'd seen on so many faces throughout the city.
Sister, what have you done? He thought.
His next thought was similar, because that's when he realized why the people had been invited inside the castle, what they were gathering to watch. It was an execution.
33. The Northern Kingdom, Castle Hill. Anise Skerrick. Anise's breath was short, her heart beating too fast. This was different than the last time she'd commanded her army. The last time was a rushed, frantic burst of orders while they faced a stone-faced giant that was already killing her men at will. Today, however, with the sun poking along the edges of the horizon, their enemy was not yet visible, hidden somewhere behind the tall, white walls of Castle Hill. Hundreds of soldiers stared at her, waiting for her to say something inspiring, something to get their blood pumping. Terin's voice was a deep whisper meant only for her.
Truth, he said. Speak the truth.
She smiled thinly at him, nodding her thanks for him being there, for being her rock. She tried not to think that the night before may have been their last together, and though it was full of passion, she felt empty in its wake, like her soul had been sucked out. She didn't want it to be the last time she felt his warmth beside her. She took a deep breath.
Truth, yes, that is the right way.
I am not my father, she said.
A sea of eyebrows went up, dark arches beneath gleaming helms.
It wasn't what they had expected her to say. "I will not force you to fight. I will not use fear as a weapon. For any who do not believe in our cause, you may go without repercussion, without punishment, without judgment." She gestured to the walls of the castle, which were dusted with snow. "On the battlefield, I am your queen commander, and you will obey me without question. But here, in the before, you have a choice. Behind those walls is an enemy of nightmares. 98 monsters that will test our mettle to its breaking point." Her voice changed, softened. "I am scared. I will admit it." Silence fell, and Anise swore she could hear each snowflake as it landed. The fear inside her felt supercharged, until it became something else. Excitement. Energy. Truth. She lifted her voice, infusing it with strength, power. "But this is my home, and I will not abandon it, not to the likes of the imposter king. That is my choice. Now it is time to make yours. Leave now and go in peace, or—" She paused again, letting that single word sink in. "Fight with me. Stand with your brothers, your fathers, your sons. Stand for our great kingdom, a kingdom that has been shamed by my father's brother, by the unnatural army he has raised against us. Stand for me, your queen, and I will fight with you, side by side. What say you?" Nothing. Snowfall. Sun breaking the horizon, shimmering across the falling flakes and gleaming armour. A pale city on a snowy hill, its impenetrable walls cloaked in years of mistrust, oppression, and fear. Ranks of soldiers, some who'd fought in numerous battles, while others who'd never experienced a single one, joined in this shattered moment of truth, of choice, of "I will stand," a voice rang out, as clear and crisp as the morning. "I will fight." Sir Metz stepped forward, his armour as pristine as always, his sword raised in a sign of loyalty. Silence fell upon his words as they floated away. But then the echo came. "I will stand. I will fight. My sword is yours, as is my life." Sir Dietrich stepped forward, blade raised to the heavens. More voices appeared, melding together until they were a single voice, a shout hammering like a drumbeat. "Stand! Fight! Stand! Fight! Stand! Fight!" Anise turned away, her eyes meeting Taryn's for one bare moment. He nodded. Beside him, Zelda was smiling, and for once, not eating. The expression on her face was unmistakable, filling Anise with warmth. Pride. She basked in the moment for three breaths, and then she led her men into battle. The city outside the castle was empty, or at least it appeared to be, though the occasional dark shadow could be seen peeking through a curtained window. She wondered whether the citizens were hiding because of Anise's army, or because of her uncle's monsters. Perhaps both, she thought. A sea of foot soldiers marched ahead of her, armed with grappling hooks and rope ladders. Anise and her various cavalries rode behind, not in superiority to the foot soldiers, but because they would be like a spear thrust in the event the soldiers managed to breach the wall and open the gates. As it turned out, none of that was necessary, for just as the first line of soldiers reached the castle wall, the gates shuddered, snow cascading from the stone parapets above them. Beside her, Taryn said, "They come to us." Another shudder, and then another, the thick wooden doors cracking in the middle where they met. There was a final crash, and the doors swung open, though the way was blocked by something as dark as night, a broad panel of flesh that was almost snake-like in appearance. Several of the soldiers fell backwards, but were held up by the rest of the men.
"Frozen hell below," Anise thought. "What is that thing?"
Something shot out from the entrance, a long black rope, snapping at them from a fanged mouth. A man screamed as the tendril grabbed him by the leg, dragging him away. A brave young man leapt forward and hacked at the monster's limb, but it was already gone, The man sucked inside the castle, his scream cut off abruptly. Anise's head spun, her thoughts scattering like sticks in a child's game of pick-em-up.
This is impossible. We are the walking dead. I have sentenced all these souls to death.
Despite the choice she gave them, she knew they would have followed her to frozen hell and back. Which might have been better than where they were now, the demon they were facing.
Terin said, Anise, your command. Give it now.
The calm in his tone was like a warm broth pooling in her mind.
I can do this. I will die for this cause if I must.
Sir Dietrich, she said, lead the assault.
Dietrich, who was no stranger to battles from his time defending Raiders Pass, didn't need further urging.
Men!
He shouted, raising his sword in the air and pointing it toward the black-fleshed beast.
Attack!
The sea churned forward, an ocean of weapons and armor and lives. As planned, the foot soldiers swept to the sides, opening up a space for the cavalries to charge through. Anise spurred her horse forward, aware of Terin at her side, his morning star already cutting wide circles around his head. Grasping the reins with one hand, she drew her own weapon, the even star Fay had given her. Nearby, she saw Zelda and Sir Craig raise their weapons together. Sir Craig leaned down to embrace his wife, pecking her quickly on the lips. The moment of tenderness was so out of place next to the monster blocking their path that it took Anise's breath away. Steeling herself, she refocused. Up ahead, a dozen fanged tendrils shot out from the castle gates. Men hacked at them, slicing several off, but not before four other men were dragged away. Shouts of war surrounded her as the first cavalry rode through the gates, directly into the wall of black flesh. Sir Dietrich slashed at the skin while Terin hammered it with blows from his morning star. Anise looked up to see what sort of monster they faced, and immediately wished she hadn't. The creature was like a black worm, with no arms or legs, save the fanged tendrils that spilled from its eyeless, noseless, earless crown. Several were stumps, spitting dark fluid, those that had been severed by her soldiers, but there were still plenty intact. They shot down toward the riders. Anise swung her Evenstar, hitting one just before it slammed into her face. The short chain wrapped around the tendril and the barbs sunk deep. The Moor screamed, and then flopped free, slapping at her horse's hooves with a wet thud that reminded her of the time she and Arch had been ice fishing in Frozen Lake and he'd landed a particularly large boarfish. One of the other riders hadn't been so fortunate. He screamed as his horse was grabbed by two snake-like tentacles, carrying them both upwards to the other snapping mouths, which quickly pulled him apart.
Sir Morley, Anise remembered,
the name of the rider she'd forgotten during the previous battle. Bile rose in her throat as her muscles threatened to freeze up.
No,
she growled. She had to be strong, for her men, for her kingdom, for herself.
How do we kill it?
She asked no one in particular. It had no eyes to blind, and the surface of its skin all looked the same. The only things they could fight were the fanged tentacles, and killing one of them seemed to have no effect on the overall beast. Nearby, Terin swept his morning star across another tentacle, cutting it off. Dietrich, his sword a maelstrom of slashes, severed two more. If nothing else, the monster was running out of tendrils. Another rider pulled up beside her.
Even a worm has a brain, Sir Met said. If we can get to it, we might have a chance.
Anise nodded.
I'll do it.
What?
Terin said.
No.
So many were dying, and this was only the first of 98 monsters they would face on this day. But Anise had already made up her mind. When the next tentacle launched itself toward her, she waited a beat longer and then wrapped her chain around it, clinging to either side as it lifted her into the air. A weight clung to her heels, and her first thought was Terin. But when she looked down, it was Zelda clinging to her, grinning like a banshee.
You thought I would let you have all the fun,
her aunt shouted. Something swooped from the side, drawing her attention away from her aunt. The tendril's jaws snapped at Anise as if it had a mind of its own, but she managed to kick it away. They rose higher and higher, until they were dangling above the monster's head, which reached almost to the top of the castle walls.
"Brace yourself,"
she cried down to Zelda, and then she released one side of the chain and dropped. Frozen air rushed past her, and she bounced off the slimy side of one of the tentacles, twisting in the air before landing hard on her shoulder. Zelda landed hard beside her, eyes wild. They started to slide, and Anise scratched at the side of the beast's slick skin to no effect. Frantically, she reached down and drew her sword, using a short thrust to jam it into the monster's flank and arrest her slide. Zelda did the same, stopping at almost the same position. They hung for a moment, just breathing, looking around. This close to the creature's body, the tentacles seemed to have forgotten her, flailing downwards, searching for fresh victims on the ground.
"We have to climb higher," Zelda said.
Anise nodded, raising her Evenstar by the leather handle, whipping it overhead and slamming it down further up. The spikes struck, sinking deep into the monster's flesh. With a grunt, she wrenched out her sword, using one arm to pull herself higher. Zelda began doing the same, using her sword to clamber up the slick skin. Next, Anise jabbed with her sword higher still, repeating the rhythm as they scaled their giant foe. Swing, pull, jab, climb, again and again, until she was at the apex, looking down upon the bloody battle, which had spilled into the castle courtyard in which she used to play as a child. She was horrified to see that while she'd been scaling Mount Slimeworm, three additional monsters had arrived and were now doing battle with the 3rd and 4th cavalries, as well as several platoons of foot soldiers. The rest of her army were bottlenecked at the castle gates, trying to press forward into combat. Of the new monsters, one was like a giant crab, its massive claws snapping men in half like individual pieces of kindling. Another had feathers and razor-sharp talons. It scooped up a handful of soldiers and flew overhead, dropping them to their deaths. The third had skin bristling with spikes, like a porcupine, and dozens of spearmen were trying to shove the tips of their long weapons between the quills to pierce its flesh. Four men were already impaled on its hide, dead. Anise shook away the images and turned her attention back to the worm she rode, which was continuing to attack the first cavalry, though it was down to only a handful of tendrils. Still, simply by rolling over, the worm could probably squash hundreds of men. She needed to finish it now. Sir Metzi's words came to mind. "Even a worm has a brain." "Dig," she said to her aunt, who had just reached the summit. Without an Evenstar, it had taken Zelda a fraction longer to complete the climb. Her aunt grinned excitedly and raised her sword overhead. Anise mimicked her movement, and then, in unison, they brought their blades down into what she hoped was the creature's head. If the worm felt the blows, it showed no sign, nor made a sound. She yanked her sword free. Again and again they cut into the worm, digging a ragged chasm into its flesh, carving deeper with each strike. Anise grunted with each stroke, her arms burning from the effort. Something changed, the black meat becoming lighter toned, and then a pink liquid spewed forth, splashing across her face. She clamped her mouth shut, the blood bitter on her tongue, and continued stabbing. Up, down, up, down, up. The world dropped out from under her, but she managed to slash down once more, her sword acting as a grappling hook as the monster fell. Screams assaulted her ears, as howling wind provided accompaniment. Deep in the monster's flesh, she rattled back and forth, bashing into her aunt when the beast slammed to the ground. She lost her grip on her sword, though Evenstar tangled around her as she shook loose, tumbling hard to the ground, banging both elbows and a knee. Already, bodies littered the ground around her. Dazed, she stared at the snowflakes falling into the courtyard. She blinked. Young Terin, just a boy, raced across her path, hurling a snowball. Expertly, she caught it in one hand, crushing it with her fingers. He squealed and tried to run away, but she launched her own snowball, catching him between the shoulder blades. He sprawled headlong in the snow, doing a full somersault and coming up wearing a grin and ice in his dark hair.
"You win again," he said.
You are the queen of Snow Wars.
Her eyes opened and Terrin was there, but he wasn't that small, skinny boy, but a broad-shouldered warrior in night-dark armour, no longer riding his stallion.
Anise, he said, kneeling beside her.
I'm fine, she said,
though she felt as if she'd been trampled by a horse and two oxen.
You're incredible, he said. Both of you. Tell us something we don't already know,
Zelda said, already back on her feet. Anise shook her head. Though Terrin's words warmed her from the inside out, they didn't have time to linger here.
We have to get back.
The monsters are fighting each other, Terrin said. It might give us a chance.
She looked past him and saw he was right. The creature with the claws snapped the giant bird's wings off as it tried to claw out its eyes. The porcupine-like monster tucked itself into a ball and rolled up against them both, poking holes in their skin.
My fool of a brother can't control them, Zelda said.
Anise nodded grimly. But still, even with the monsters distracted by each other, they were losing soldiers in droves as side effects to the carnage. Nearby, the worm's skin shriveled and fell away, leaving a half-naked man in the center. He was dead, his head opened by the two Garrick blades. Terrin strode over and retrieved the swords, handing the weapons to Anise and her aunt, and helping Anise to stand. Side by side by side, they strode back into the battle with the monsters. Anise was exhausted, slumped on the ground, her arms on her knees. She could barely lift her sword or Evenstar. Though they'd killed 46 monsters thus far, Sir Metz was keeping the tally, shouting it out with each new victory. Their foes kept coming relentlessly. Her uncle had begun releasing one at a time, having realized very quickly that the monsters would fight each other if released together. The cost of each victory had been steep. Anise didn't know the exact numbers, but she was certain she'd lost at least half of her force. The 3rd Cavalry was gone, as well as the 6th. All of them had taken significant casualties, and most of the horses were lost. In reality, they were all just foot soldiers at this point. Even Anise, the Queen, a title as worthless in battle as a dress constructed entirely of diamonds. Another monster fell, a mammothin as big as a small mountain that had been their toughest foe yet. Its woolly hide was bristling with arrows and spears, many of them broken. Sir Dietrich had done the most damage, carving a line across the beast's throat. Like all the other monsters, when its fur and skin peeled away, a dead man was all that remained.
47!
Sir Metz shouted, his voice easily discernible in the exhausted silence.
What nightmare will emerge next? Anise wondered.
The ground rumbled beneath her, as if in response. Something bellowed, a cry that sounded more anguished than angry. And then the monster stalked through the inner arch set into the courtyard wall on four legs, forced to duck its head, which reached to the top. Its fur was black, its snout long and grey, sitting above a large mouth. Its paws were big and padded and ringed with curved claws. The enormous bear reared up onto its hind legs and released another mournful bellow, revealing sharp teeth as it pounded its chest.
Archers!
Dietrich shouted. After the initial wave of four monsters, the commander of the 1st Cavalry had gotten into a rhythm. Archers first, then foot soldiers, then cavalry, if any remained. A three-pronged attack that worked in the end, though it took time and sacrifice. Too much sacrifice.
Fire!
The archers unleashed a storm of arrows, which hit various parts of the bear, though none were shot high enough to hit its head. Several stuck in its flesh, but most bounced off of its strong hide. This wasn't unusual. Most of the monsters seemed to have almost armor-like skin. The bear roared again and then charged, scattering the archers to either side. Dietrich cried his next command, and the foot soldiers bravely charged, an assortment of seasoned veterans and old men and boys no older than Archer. They hacked and jabbed. Some even launched grappling hooks, using them to try to climb the bear to get a shot at its head.
They are spectacular, Anise thought, watching.
Another mid-battle decision they'd made was to have half the army attack a monster while the other half rested. That way the attackers were always fresh, or at least fresher than they would be. An added benefit was that the soldiers wouldn't get in each other's way. Terin paced beside her, watching